Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're not alone in having a hard time understanding nutrition labels. All too often, we pick one item over another because of health claims. However, some of these are misleading and it's difficult to understand healthy options without a thorough inspection of ingredients. Just remember that ingredients are pretty much always listed by quantity, from highest to the lowest amount. And this means that the first is what the manufacturer has used the most of. So a good rule of thumb is to scan the first three, and they make up the larger part of what you're eating. One such item that you don't really need to worry about is Yo Valley's Super Thick Curd Natural Yogurt. It's got no added ingredients, no added sugar, just creamy yogurt strained up to 9 times, resulting in a rich and velvety smooth yogurt. To find out more, you can head over to yovalley.co.uk and find it in your local supermarket. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you all with the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhianna Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'm so lucky to be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with the trusted expert advice. In the last 15 years, production of clothing has doubled, and at the same time, the number of times something is worn has halved. Now that means that over 11 million garments are sent to landfill every week in the UK alone. Ultimately, the novelty that fashion promises is causing irreversible harm to both planet and people. This week's Food for Thought sees presenter and climate activist Venetia Lamanna join me to discuss why it's time for the wasteful fashion industry to clean up its act. Hello, Venetia.
Hello, Rhiannon.
I think today's episode has been so overdue, and I know I've been wanting to record it with you for so long. I think in a way, if we kick off by discussing the fact that fashion's wastefulness, I mean, it is almost on a par with single-use plastic, really, if we're looking at the impact that it has.
Yeah, it is. It's a hugely, not only wasteful industry, but also polluting industry. It's actually, if you're kind of looking to get into sustainability and thinking about the planet, fashion's a really good way to think about it, because it's a very accessible way of thinking how a piece of clothing goes from the earth. Ultimately, when you grow a crop, so something like cotton, it comes from the earth, and then it's picked and sewn and cut and all of these different things, all these different processes which make up the supply chain before it's packed and delivered and lands on your doorstep or lands in the shop for you to buy. It's got a huge carbon footprint, the fashion industry. It's supposed to be one of the kind of top two or three polluting industries. In terms of waste, it's incredibly wasteful. We live in a time where fashion's thought of as something disposable. Fashion is incredibly cheap now in a lot of places. And because it's so cheap, we often feel like it doesn't hold much significance. So we send a lot of clothes to landfill and a lot of clothing is incinerated. And all this at the same time, what's really, really important to bear in mind is that someone somewhere is paying. The people who are making our clothes are so often not paid a living wage, and 80% of them are female. So when we think about women's rights and being feminists, we have to think about that with our clothing, because we want to support all women, right? And we want to support the women who are making our clothes.
Goodness. I mean, so many connections to what you've just said there. In terms of what I've done in my previous life, I'm thinking when I was at university and I used to shop at these certain websites where clothing was so cheap, and I never made a connection that it came from the earth. I never even thought of the fact it impacted the environment, and I didn't think about the chain of people and somebody somewhere that was involved with the process of making those clothes. And I think what you're doing on social media at the moment is fabulous. And you've recently raised awareness with all the, you know, charity campaigns. You've been at the forefront of claims suggesting that the brands behind them are just, you know, greenwashing customers. Could you delve into that for us a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Greenwashing is something that we see a lot in fashion, especially at the moment. It comes from the term whitewashing, which is basically when white people kind of whitewash industries like the film industries, take over in lots of different ways. And often it's involved in like cultural appropriation. So when we as white people kind of commodify certain parts of BIPOC cultures, make them our own, make them trendy, and don't give credit where credit's due. It's also kind of like a marketing ploy. And it's the same with greenwashing. Companies are often kind of telling us or trying to tell us that they're doing something good when they're really not. You see this a lot recently with kind of plastic water bottle companies telling us that everything is okay because their bottles are made from recycled plastic, when really a good alternative to plastic water bottles, if we're in a position to do so, like, you know, in the global north like we are and here in the UK, is just refill a water bottle, right? It's like a much more eco-friendly way of doing it. So with fashion, we see fashion brands greenwash in lots of different ways. And I've taken to social media to call them out on it, because I have a platform and I want to use it, and I'm kind of tired of the nonsense. So brands like H&M and Zara have kind of conscious collections. So they'll bring out a small range of clothes that are made from various things like orange juice pulp and unicorn tears or whatever it is. And they tell us that that's good. And I'm not going to deny that and say it's bad. It is good. We should be using natural fibers when we make clothes. But the problem with certain fashion brands is that, sure, they're using a kind of planet-friendly dyes and materials, but what about the people making their clothes? And also, the sheer amount of clothing that they're making doesn't make up for the good that they're doing. I think the good that they're doing counts for about 0.02% of their entire business, a brand like H&M. So it is a drop in the ocean, for want of a better phrase. Recently we've seen a lot of charity and slogan t-shirts during the pandemic. And this is very much a kind of nuanced debate. And I take quite a hard stance on it, but I also really appreciate that we have to look at both sides. So on the one hand, if we buy a slogan t-shirt that goes towards supporting, for example, the NHS, that's a good thing, because the NHS right now really need our money and they need support, and frontline workers need all the support that they can get. We need to keep everyone healthy. But the reason why I've kind of found that so frustrating in the first place is because the NHS isn't a charity. So this is about a wider issue, right? Like, we need our government to give frontline workers and the NHS the adequate support, so we don't need to be funding them ourselves. So that's kind of my initial frustration. And then during a pandemic, if we're making t-shirts, we have to be asking the questions, who's making those t-shirts? Are they safe in their factories? Are they social distancing? Do they have all the right PPE? And the same applies for the people packing those t-shirts and delivering those t-shirts, right? So we've got to think about all of those people in that supply chain, because if we're only thinking about the money, that where our money is going, that might be going towards the NHS, but then what about all the people who are potentially going to be harmed by the work that they're doing, which will mean that they need extra health support, you see? So it's kind of like this vicious circle where although we're doing one good thing, we're not thinking about the big picture. And I think that's something really important to bear in mind. If you are going to buy a charity t-shirt, my advice would be, is it a t-shirt that you're going to want to wear for life? Because the most sustainable clothes in our wardrobes are the ones we already own. Mm-hmm. And if we have t-shirts that we want to wear for life, they're going to automatically kind of have a lower carbon footprint, because we're going to be having them forever and loving them forever and valuing them forever. And the second thing I would say is, could you possibly instead donate to the cause directly and upcycle mm-hmm. a t-shirt you already have? That way you're doing something really good and you're also kind of making the most of something that you already have in your wardrobe. But I mean, it's a huge, huge kind of, yeah, nuanced debate and conversation.
Well, where on earth do you start? Because like you said, there's so many people involved in this chain, if we call it a chain reaction, of from the people producing it to the materials used, where they're sourced from. Like you said, the money could go directly to the charity rather than the purchase of a t-shirt. And if you're also looking at the fact you mentioned at the beginning with major retailers, I mean, we're talking millions and millions of pounds worth of orders happening here. So surely there is money within these companies to be making changes. And of course, now the high street has closed as well and everything's moved online, surely that perhaps has impacted something a lot along that chain as well.
Yeah, so and this is something that I've really come up against. I mean, firstly, let's just talk about how much money there is in the global apparel market. It's valued at $3 trillion. So it's absolutely mammoth. And of course, like, it's easy for someone to say, let's boycott the industry for their unethical practices. But then equally, we want to support the people making our clothes. And we want this to be a good ethical industry. That's what we all want. But again, we have to really bear in mind there is this huge disparity and a massive wealth gap. Let's talk about Philip Green. Philip Green runs Arcadia. Arcadia is made up of a few fashion brands, including Topshop and Miss Selfridge. Philip Green is a billionaire. He has so much money. He's also probably, I think he's a tax evader. I think it'd be fair to say that. He's always just kind of on his private jets, living this ridiculous lifestyle that most of us would only be able to dream about. Mm-hmm. And yet he's asking for a bailout from the government at the moment. He asked for his staff to be furloughed, which is absolutely wild. A billionaire is asking for money from the government. And at the same time, we have brands at the moment who are refusing to pay up for work that has already been completed. So work that garment workers did before the pandemic and at the beginning of the pandemic, fashion brands are refusing to pay for that work. So brands like Urban Outfitters, brands like Free People, which I know is the most confusing name in the entire world for a brand. You would think that would be an ethical brand. Actually, Primark is another one. I thought they were actually paying up, but it turns out they're not. A really good resource for all of this stuff that I'm talking about right now is Remake Our World on Instagram, or just Remake. If you type Remake into your search engine, you'll find them. Yeah, it's just, and this is kind of what I mean about when we're thinking about this system change that we're all talking about at the moment, and this kind of capitalist system that clearly isn't working right now. When you look at this kind of huge wealth gap between the billionaires who run the fast fashion brands and then the people at the bottom of the chain who are not even close to making a living wage, they barely make. I think it might be $70 a month, but I'll have to check that. There's just this huge, huge discrepancy. And when you look into it, it's kind of upsetting.
It's really upsetting. And I can't pretend to know anything about this area, obviously being a nutritionist, but wanting to learn more about the world and the way it affects the planet, technically it does link back to my profession too, because we're talking about the planet just as much as everything else you've just mentioned. And the government does need to take an interest in this, as you've quite rightly said. Everything you've said and that resource that you've mentioned, thank you. I'd encourage everybody to go and have a look, because I read that to make just a single t-shirt, it can take 594 gallons of water. I mean, that's as much as one person would drink in 2.5 years, Venetia. So it is affecting the planet, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It does have a huge environmental impact. And because I just want to give you a reference, for the amount of money a garment worker would make, they can earn as little as $21 a month. Mm. So when you think about a billionaire like Philip Green, and then you've got perhaps some of his garment workers earning $21 a month, that kind of really puts into perspective. And in terms of environmental footprint, absolutely. I think when we talk about the climate crisis, we immediately go to things like oil and aviation, and definitely food. I think especially on your podcast, you know, food does come up a lot, but fashion is hugely polluting and it does have a huge impact. And what's so kind of distressing is, for so much of that impact that we're having when we buy clothes, so many of those clothes don't even get bought or worn. They just end up as landfill. And that's kind of what makes it so frustrating. I think what would be really great to see in the future is if we took a kind of more circular and zero waste approach to it, which is happening through various forms of innovation. Can we create an industry I talk to kind of sustainable and ethical small designers and I say, how do you not create any waste, especially if you're really inclusive and you cater for lots of different sizes? And they just say, well, we make what we get orders for, right? And I think that's kind of the problem. We're so used to walking into shops and seeing rails and rails of the same piece. What happens? We've all seen it, those rails, especially during the sales, right? Rails of all these clothes. What happens to those clothes when they're not?
Like a £1 bikini and things that have been selling. I mean, yeah, where do they all go?
Exactly. Yes, that £1 bikini was distressful.
That's another topic. Finish your line of thought, first of all.
I think one of the main issues and one of the reasons why it's got such huge impact is the sheer scale of the model. Just for some resources, if someone's new to this and they're listening to me now thinking, oh my gosh, this is so overwhelming and so much to take in, a really good access point to learning about fashion is the True Cost documentary, which is on Netflix, and that will kind of give you a better idea of like the time when this all changed and when it all got out of hand, because my parents didn't grow up with this approach to fashion, this kind of disposability that we have now, and it didn't have the footprint then than it did now. So that would be my kind of go-to entry point into learning about this. Yeah, that documentary on Netflix.
Great, because it does feel like you said, our parents didn't have that approach, that in a very short space of time, an industry has expanded and ballooned to a place where there was really no going back. And I think that does lead us quite nicely on to the £1 bikini thing that did spark a lot of controversy, and I think you were the one that brought my attention to it in the first place.
Yes, so I think this must have been last summer. Misguided released a bikini that was £1, that cost £1. And, you know, as a consumer, especially, you know, if you're on a budget and you're going on holiday and you want to, you know, flaunt your good stuff on the beach and all that wonderful stuff, a £1 bikini sounds really appealing, right? But that is so little money. And it's such a disposable amount of, that's less than the price of a coffee. That's less than, I mean, it's throwaway almost. For a lot of us. And not only was this bikini super cheap, that it raised the really important question of how much your worker is being paid, it was also made of poly materials. So a lot of clothing, especially from fast fashion brands, is made from various different polyesters. This is really easy to find. If you just look under, if you're wearing a t-shirt right now or a hoodie or a jumper, just have a look at the kind of left-hand side little label. You'll have your washing instructions there, and you'll also find out what your t-shirt or what your clothes are made from. And we do need to be wary of these poly materials because ultimately poly is plastic. So if we're conscious of, I don't know, you know, being good with reusables, whether it's reusable water bottles, coffee cups, keep cups, all of that stuff, let's really think about our clothes, because they are just as polluting. And yeah, that bikini was made of just brand new plastic, and it just felt tone deaf, to be honest. Last summer, when we were, you know, last year, the climate conversation was really, well, just with everything that was happening with Extinction Rebellion and Greta Thunberg, like the conversation was really, yeah, at the foot of the branch. So it just felt so tone deaf for them to be bringing that bikini out.
And did they listen to you? Because I think you did get a lot of attention or traction when you spoke up about this issue at the time. Was it taken note of?
Yeah, it's funny when you put two coconut shells over your your chest region, how that can spark some interest. No, I have had, it's been really interesting, the kind of response I've had from various different brands. Misguided actually just completely ignored me for that bikini, but I've got a lot of experience of calling brands out. So Misguided completely ignore me, H&M completely ignored me, Zara have completely ignored me. I did have some back and forth within the style, on a few different occasions. They are another fast fashion brand, UK based. They ended up blocking me, which was annoying, to be honest, because we were having some back and forth. And I really appreciate when a brand gets in touch with me. So Pretty Little Thing did get in touch with me when I called them out for something that they did. I lose track of it all, to be honest. And I did actually have a meeting with the CEO, and although I really don't agree with their business model and a lot of what they do, really, a lot of what they do, to be honest, I was really grateful to be in that room and having that conversation with him, because I thought, okay, you actually maybe do care, and you actually are willing to make a change. So should I actually be surprised if, like, what the surprising thing should be when brands ignore us? That should be the surprising thing as consumers, because if we, I don't know if you're listening to this, but think about the, if you have any small brands that you support, whether that's small food brands, whether that's small ethical fashion brands, you do want that connection with them. You want that kind of customer service with them. And so when a brand doesn't get back to us when we call them out for something that's, you know, not only bad for people but also bad for planet, what are they doing?
They support the consumers, always right, aren't you? That's the thing that you should be taught.
Exactly. And it's just distressing. So much of the industry, the fashion industry, is incredibly important, I think, for a lot of reasons. And I've been back and forth with a lot of kind of my feelings about it. I don't think it's about boycotting it. I think it's just about really, really changing it.
You have to innovate and change with the times. Exactly. And even when you mentioned plastic being poly, you know, the word poly, we had on our plastic episode devoted to the subject, the fact that a lot of clothing, because it's got plastic pieces in it, that's what ends up in the ocean as well. It's all a vicious cycle, as you rightly said at the beginning.
Exactly. So how can we, and I think it's really wonderful to see lots of brands creating clothing from waste, but how can we change the business model? How can we change our habits in order for that not to happen? Just to kind of give you some stats, because I feel like you're a stats girl. Oh,
send them my way. I love it. Go for it.
I will do. This is a stat from Wrap UK. There's an estimated £30 billion worth of clothes that have never been worn that are just hanging in our wardrobes. And then there's another stat from Waste Association, which is 10,000 items of clothing are sent to landfill every 5 minutes, which is the equivalent to £140 million every single year. So that's another important thing to think about, right? Like, let's think, if you don't feel motivated by some of the things that I've spoken about, think about the money that you might save if you're wearing what you already have and that kind of thing. I think it's an important thing to bear in mind.
It's astounding, the numbers. When you say it like that, it really does hit home. And it's made me think as well, in this current situation, perhaps one positive to come out of lockdown, and as the time we're recording this episode, for anyone listening, is during the pandemic, COVID, coronavirus, and everybody's at home. So a lot of people are just recycling their wardrobes. They're not really going out and buying new clothes, I think. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are online shopping, but I, for one, haven't bought a thing. It's been a very interesting time, and perhaps we've been shown, well, we've had a chance to see that we don't need all of this extra, all these extra things. We need to live more sustainably. And there's a lot of confusion anyway around the materials that clothes are made of. So what would you say, Venetia, for people wanting to know, are the best sustainable options? Because jeans are bad, aren't they, for instance, people say.
Yeah, we do have to. Denim is a very, very, it's cotton and it's very, very thirsty. It requires a lot of water. There are lots of kind of sustainable denim brands out there, but I would just say there's incredible vintage denim available too. So something that it's really important for me to acknowledge is I have various levels of privilege when it comes to sustainable fashion, and my various layers of privilege allow me to shop in a certain way that aligns with my ethics. And you know, I'm straight sized and I live in London. I'm in kind of I have good charity shops and vintage shops near to me. And although I loved kind of charity shopping, I love charity shopping, but I used to do it as a student out of necessity. I don't have to do that anymore. I do it now because it's a way for me to kind of shop that aligns better with my ethics. But I think when we start thinking about sustainable fashion, I think it's very easy for us, and I've made this mistake in the past too, to think, okay, I have to buy my way to a sustainable wardrobe. And actually, that's the last thing that we should be doing. If you are someone who kind of wanted to look into more kind of being more zero waste in your kitchen, we think it's the same with that, right? Like, you think you have to buy lots of beautiful Pinterest looking jars to fit your zero waste goodies inside. Actually, like, no. The key is actually to buy less and to have less. So my kind of key pieces of advice, if that's what you're asking, is that kind of what you're asking?
That's definitely it.
My key pieces of advice are, make the most of what you already have. So go Marie Kondo on your wardrobe, go through it all, organize it, and actually see what you have in it, because so often we have clothes in our wardrobes that we forget we have. I put away my summer wardrobe in the winter and then I get them out around this time every year and I feel like I have a whole new wardrobe of clothes. That's kind of something that I do. But organize your wardrobe in such a way that you actually know what you have in it, and then when you feel like you need something new, could you swap with a friend? Could you swap with a family member? Could you potentially just invest in something that is already in existence? So that is things like car boot sales, vintage shops, and charity stores. But it's also making the most of online. There is a blossoming secondhand industry online with sites like Depop and eBay.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, Depop. Depop's great. It's a really good way of finding pre-loved clothes, but also kind of online vintage sellers. If you're someone who is not straight sized, I'd really recommend eBay because they have really good filters on there, and you can also filter for fabrics, which I think is really, really useful. And then I also love shops like Vestiaire Collective. I'm also really, really, I really enjoy renting clothes. I don't know if you've tried this, Ree. Have you tried renting?
So I've tried, I think it's Higher Street, and the one I heard from you, I saw you advertising, is it Her?
Yeah.
And that was amazing. I got the most beautiful dress that I could hire for an event and then returned, which was great.
That's so good. Yeah, there's so many rental websites, which are just incredible. They basically, it's kind of like Airbnb for your clothes. So yeah, there's Her, there's By Rotation, there's On Loan, there's New Wardrobe. There are so many. So I find them, they're really good for kind of your one-off pieces for like weddings, events, you know, red carpets if you're someone who attends premieres, all of that stuff.
We can all be glammed up every night at a premiere.
exactly. And then I personally love supporting small ethical brands. I like to feel that I know the people that I'm supporting when I'm buying something. And I also kind of like to, I don't know, feel like I'm investing in a good ethical company that's supporting people. And there are so many small, sustainable, ethical brands out there. Once you start looking, you won't be able to stop. I get a lot of questions about whether or not a brand is sustainable, and it just takes a little bit of research, to be honest. There's not really a blanket statement that applies to brands. People often reference an app called Good On You, but I'm not entirely 100% keen on them because they still call a lot of fast fashion brands ethical when they're not. There's so much to think about when you support, when you buy new clothes. I guess my main piece of advice, if you're someone who doesn't kind of have the time and that kind of thing to look into sustainable brands, is to just buy what you love.
Yeah.
Number one piece of advice, only buy the clothes that make your heart sing and make you want to take the clothes that you're already wearing off to put on those clothes.
I mean, that's such a lovely way of looking at it, because it's very, very overwhelming for everybody. And like you said, a lot of research needs to be done. But even the basic tips you gave, like sorting out your wardrobe so you can see what you've got, because we are in a position, I mean, most people listen to this podcast, I'm sure, not everybody, but will be in a privileged situation where they probably do have a wardrobe that could do with a bit of a makeover, you know, that could do with cleaning out. Does this still fit? Am I going to get wear out of this? Can I recycle this? Can I adapt it? You know, like you said, getting savvy with your wardrobe can save you purchasing more unnecessary things. And on a whole, if we are talking about carbon footprints, I mean, there was a study that we looked at, the Retrition team, before you came on this podcast, that said using clothes for 9 months longer can reduce an individual's carbon footprint for the garment by 30%. Now, is the fashion industry getting better when it comes to acknowledging the environment, like we've said before? Is there anything they can do to be more sustainable?
Yes, I think they are. I do think they really are. I feel as though the conversation around the climate crisis and sustainability in general is at the forefront of the fashion agenda, especially less so with the online brands, I'm finding, you know, the kind of online empires like Pretty Little Thing, all of those. I think it's kind of less at the forefront of their agenda, but definitely with the high street, I think it's very much on the agenda. The thing that we have to be, I think brands need to really be as transparent as they possibly can.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
But transparency doesn't necessarily mean you're doing a good thing. They need to be as transparent as they possibly can be. And I think they also need to offer us as consumers enough kind of education and information for us to feel like we know what we're buying into. I think it's a two-way thing. So it needs to come from brands and it needs to come from us as consumers. I do feel encouraged. I do think the industry is going in a good way. I personally would like to see the entire system changed. Because I think it needs to happen. I would like for what is the fashion industry without the people making our clothes? Like they don't get made if the garment workers aren't supported and aren't a part of that puzzle. I'd like to see them running the show, and I'd like to see the greedy billionaires out.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's probably what everybody would like to see. In fact, especially after listening to this podcast, because I was even looking at, really high end brands like Gucci now have said that they're going seasonless was the term they used. So they're only going to do two fashion shows a year. I mean, will that something like that, is that kind of really have a big impact?
I'm really pleased you brought that up, actually. Yeah, I think Gucci are an incredibly powerful brand. They have so much influence and they're really, really important in the kind of luxury realm. And I do think their CEO designer, their head designer, really implied that it was for environmental reasons. Whether it's for environmental reasons or it's for money saving reasons, I still think it's a really positive step in the right direction. And I'm hopeful that it will have a big impact on the rest of the industry, because I think things do filter down from the top. So fingers crossed.
Well, it's like trends, isn't it? But you said filtering down from the top, people look at celebrities and social media influencers for, I guess, what they're wearing. They're the trendsetters. So I guess if we see more celebrities using the higher places that you've suggested before, you know, hiring their clothes, social media influencers talking about their Depop pages, that would encourage people?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would actually maybe use this moment to encourage you, if you are a social media user, to have a really good think about the kind of people that you follow, if you do follow fashion influencers particularly, because, you know, I should say, like, I used to consume a lot of fast fashion and I used to feel pressure to be always wearing the latest trends, and the release that I have felt through celebrating what I already have. And I follow fashion bloggers and influencers who make the most of what they already have, who celebrate what they already own, who buy vintage and do all of that good stuff. I've just felt like I couldn't keep up when I followed people who were constantly showing off their new outfits. And I have a hashtag which I'd really encourage people to kind of use if they are Instagram users. It's triple OTD, which is a kind of middle finger up to the OOTD, outfit of the day hashtag. It stands for old outfit of the day. And there are some really cool people using it now. I think it's time to kind of have a slower approach, and I think there's a lot of joy and beauty to be found in the stories that so many of our clothes have. And, you know, if we have hand-me-downs and that kind of thing, you know, there's so much to be told in those pieces. And I think there's something really beautiful about loving our clothes for longer.
Oh, when you said that, it brought a little memory of, you know, an item I've got from my grandma, who sadly isn't with us anymore. But little things like that, that everybody has, you're right, a little connection to a little story. Whereas I guess on social media, and also a lot of it will just be a gifted item that will be promoted, but not really loved and cherished, like you quite rightly said. And people need to be careful, don't they? Because they've got to remember, at the end of the day, the media isn't a reflection of real life a lot of the time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah.
So if we move on now, I've got lots of questions from people that they wanted to ask you, Venetia. So I'm going to try and pick out a few for you now. Now, the first one is from Kim, and she has said, before COVID-19, I was going to lots of events and often wanting new outfits. How can I still, you've kind of answered this already, but how can I still have some great dresses, but in a way that's better for the planet?
Yeah, I definitely think renting. I think renting's the one for that kind of thing. Yeah, I would say renting. Yeah. And then I think I invested in two vintage dresses, which are kind of really good for those kind of events last year. And I know they're going to be the kind of dresses that I'm going to wear for life. I am obsessed with eBay for vintage dresses. And then also I love a shop called Laura Von Baer in East London. She has an amazing selection of vintage dresses. And I think there was one other that I'd really recommend. I think, to be honest, I think renting is the best bet.
Yeah. And supporting at a time like this small businesses, I suppose, as well. Perhaps not just the big high street retailers, because it's a tough time for everybody if we're looking at that angle. And Courtney has asked, I've recently become aware that jewellery and gemstones are harming the earth and individuals. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Venetia. What alternatives or ethical brands should I be looking to?
Oh, great question. Yes, you're right. This is what's kind of unnerving about learning about sustainability. You realize that everything has an impact. it's honestly, it's actually nonstop. It gets to the point where you're just like, ah, system change. But yes, it's true. It is true. I think it's important to bear this in mind. On the one hand, if you're buying jewelry, ultimately, especially if it's a special piece, I would say that you're going to have it for a long time, which is really wonderful. And that's what we should be focusing on. But yes, it is also important to bear in mind where things like diamonds and gemstones are being sourced from. I don't know if a lot of your listeners are kind of in a place where they're like looking to get married and engaged.
Well, I'm sure a lot of weddings, Venetia, I know 5 this year have been postponed for next year. So I think there's always lots of that going on, especially now there'll be a backlog.
Exactly. So maybe this is the time to think about an ethical engagement ring or wedding ring. So I think vintage is always the best way to go. Pre-existing is always a really, really good way to go. There's a really wonderful brand called Fenton & Co. And they source all of their gemstones sustainably. They also specialize in wedding and engagement ring, so I really, really love them. And then there are brands who use lab grown diamonds, which I think is just such a cool thing. It's like lab grown meat, but lab grown diamonds. Yeah. So a much, much smaller imprint on the planet. Brands like Kimai, which is Kimai, brands like Larkin Berry, also Sasset, Sacet, and lots of brands are using recycled materials, recycled metals, gold, silvers. There's one called Catch Reese, which I really love. It's another kind of small London brand. There's lots of really, really cool brands using recycled materials. Norfolk's is another one. I mean, there's so many. It's almost like harmful knowing about them, because then you just want everything.
Yeah. And as we were saying that, I was looking at the hair clip in my hair. I was kind of fiddling with it between my fingers, and then I realized, oh, this is probably not a sustainable hair clip.
But I also think we should also be very, but, and I know this will resonate with you so much, because you talk about this so much with food. It's really important not to guilt trip ourselves.
Yes.
You know, there's only so much we can do as individuals. And I think if we can kind of focus on investing in pieces that we love and just having a slightly slower, more conscious approach, that's just a really, really good step.
Well, even raising awareness now, I mean, the last question we've got, like you said, just having a conversation is so important, because it will enable small changes to happen as well that are realistic. But Orla, she has said, how fast is the process from curation to hitting the stores? Which is an interesting one.
Oh, that is a really, really interesting one. It totally depends on the brand. Fast fashion can be a matter of days. Which I find particularly distressing. I mean, I found that particularly distressing at the beginning of the pandemic with the NHS t-shirts and the charity t-shirts, just because they were being produced so quickly, which was just such a kind of safety scare. So yeah, it can be a matter of kind of weeks. I should say those t-shirts were already, they'd already been made. So it was just a printing process, which is why they were able to send them out so quickly. With your kind of general high street fast fashion brands, it's a couple of weeks, and then much, I would say, slower for kind of slow ethical brands. But it's quick if you think about it. How long it would take us as individuals to make a dress from home from scratch.
gosh, takes me back to textiles GCSE, which surprisingly I did really well in. But now the thought of getting a sewing machine out, Venetia, I am not skilled in that area at all.
Oh my gosh, Ree, actually, you should so get into back into that if you ever find the time. Yeah. But just something I wanted to tell you about, because I know you've got a newborn. There is a really good kind of rental service for baby clothes.
No.
Yeah, it's called Bundly, which is with a double, so like a bundle, but Bundly. Really, really amazing small brand that, yeah, you can basically rent and send back baby clothes.
That's incredible, because one thing that's so interesting, I'm not going to go on a whole rant about baby things, I promise, but on that subject, babies grow faster than anything. Obviously, you grow the human in you, and then they grow super fast outside of you. And before you know it, within a week or two, clothes don't fit anymore. And that's the sad reality. So I've been handing down or borrowing from friends now. But the waste must be humongous for baby clothing, actually. So that's an area. Thank you, Venetia, for raising, because I can imagine that is a huge contributory factor. But I digress. We are now going to do our fact or fiction round. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. Okay, so if you could answer fact or fiction to the following questions. There is no such thing as 100% sustainable fabric.
Fact.
The more expensive the garment, the more environmentally friendly it is.
Fiction.
Yes. Nearly 10,000 litres are needed to produce just a single pair of jeans.
This is a test. I would say fact.
Well, I'm not the expert in this area at all. Fashion made of natural fibres can be composted.
I would say it depends, but generally, probably fact.
This is a tough one. Average UK household spends £1,300 every year on clothing.
Fact?
You can tell we did a lot of research on this one. More than half of the clothes donated to charity shops are incinerated.
To be honest, most of them end up in the global south, which is so harmful and polluting. I'm going to say fact.
Oh, it's so sad. Secondhand clothing is damaging manufacturing in developing countries.
Oh, fiction.
Okay, that's nice to know. The fashion industry's carbon emissions are higher than the aviation industry.
Fact.
That just shocks me. That one just gets me. Vegan leather is eco-friendly.
Fiction.
Oh, I'm going to interrupt the fact or fiction round. Can you just explain that? Because I think a lot of people think, you know, veganism, and if you are doing the full circle veganism, and of course incorporating the lifestyle as much as just the food you eat, which is basically what veganism should be anyway. What exactly does that mean, eco-friendly leather for a vegan?
It's, again, totally depends on the item, but a lot of vegan-friendly leathers, shoes, handbags, all of that stuff is made from plastic. So I'm vegan, but I would still prefer not to invest in new vegan leather that's made from plastic. So I think it is something to be really wary of, just because I'm so in it for the kind of environmental reasons. I can't believe we got this far through the podcast without me saying I'm vegan. Am I even vegan if we got this far without me saying that? There are incredible vegan leathers coming out made from things like mushroom. I also have, bought a bag from this incredible company called Tea and Tequila, and it's made from cactus.
Wow.
And it honestly is the most buttery, beautiful fake leather in the entire world. So yes, fiction. It's definitely not all good for the planet, and it's something to be wary of.
Fabulous. I love how you described it as buttery. That was a gorgeous description there. And the last question, we have the power to change the fashion industry for the better.
Fact.
Yeah, I thought that was a brilliant fact or fiction round. But that does wrap up the episode. But before we do finish, let's touch on veganism just once, because I think it is an extremely important topic. And as you said, people make that choice for ethical reasons, perhaps sustainable reasons. And I'm always having to state that, obviously, working in the nutrition world, that that is a lifestyle choice that somebody's making. And you, not a vegan necessarily won't know, like you quite rightly said, that vegan leather is made from plastic. It's not always healthier or eco-friendly.
Yeah, it's a huge conversation, one that I've thought so much about over the years, because I've been vegan for I think over five years now, and I love it because it works really well for me. I love cooking. I love plant-based foods. It just really suits me. But for some people, it's not right. And for some people, they can't go all the way for so many different reasons. And I think more vegans need to be kind of greet that with open arms. There have been times, especially at the beginning, where I felt so passionately, it kind of took over in a little way when I first went vegan. I felt so passionately that everyone should be vegan. But actually, it's such a huge nuanced conversation and topic, and it's not right for everyone. I think the more plants we can get on our plates, the better. If we can consume less animal products, great. I have to say I never kind of talk about it from a health perspective, because I'm not qualified in that area at all. For me, it's definitely an ethical one, but also something that I really think about more recently is it's this kind of system that I don't want to be a part of. So my main reason for not wanting to kind of buy fast fashion is I don't want to be part of that whole system, you know, this kind of quite destructive, unethical system. And I feel the same way about the food industry. You know, what was kind of quite upsetting, I think, was a lot of the finger pointing at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, this could have, especially from the man we won't be named who runs that country, you know, pointing fingers. And I just found it didn't sit well with me. Now, I'm not wanting to excuse some of the practices, but of, you know, various ways of selling and meat and that kind of thing. But we have those issues in the UK. Like we mass produce animals for our own consumption, and that I don't want to be a part of that. So it's interesting being asked about it, because it's such a part of my life now. I don't find myself talking about it or even thinking about it as much anymore. I'm so kind of I don't know, but I love it really suits my body, but I don't have any problem with anyone who's not fully vegan.
And it's very interesting that that's something that you even bring up to discuss, because everybody, and I say it on every episode, is unique. And as Venetia quite rightly said, there will be people in a position to adopt certain habits, lifestyle changes. Like we said, if you're in a financial position to shop in certain places, if you have a health condition that means you are unable to go completely vegan, there's so many factors involved. And I think to wrap up the episode completely, I would finish with a food for thought. And mine would definitely be that, from hearing Venetia speak so passionately, and I'm always so captivated when I hear Venetia speak, because it instills a passion inside me that sometimes I overlook. It makes me believe that I can make a difference, and we all can. Small changes really help. And I remember when we had at the Food for Thought Festival at the beginning of this year, when Venetia spoke on our panel with Professor Mark Maslin about climate change, how just enthralled I was with the conversation and how times can change. So what I'm going to say to everybody is that, remember, social media can be a force for good. So that's a tool that you all have the power to utilize. From your hands with your mobile phone, you can spread good information that Venetia's put out on this episode today. And I, for one, am definitely going to be proudly wearing the same outfits again and again and checking out that new baby site. And Venetia?
I would really actually agree with what you've said. I do think it can be very easy to feel overwhelmed and not know where to start when we're trying to do our bit for the planet and do a bit better. But I would really, really suggest just adding up those small changes over time. So can you consistently make small positive changes in various aspects of your life, whether that's travel, whether that's fashion, whether that's what's on your plate, all of that stuff. Can you make those changes in your life incrementally? And then can you also really kind of rally and lobby for this system change that we've been touching on? Can you write to your MP to talk about things that you're not happy with? Can you make sure that you vote in elections? Can you and really kind of hassle for this Green New Deal that we so desperately need if we're kind of going to live in a time where we are living more aligned with this beautiful planet? And just appreciate that it is absolutely possible for human beings to live in harmony with the planet. We have so many incredible indigenous people all around the world who know how to live in complete harmony with nature. They've been doing it for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. How can we learn from them to live in a way that benefits not only ourselves, but the planet too?
Beautiful food for thought, Venetia. Words sum up perfectly what you guys can do as well. And if we need to find out more, where can we see more from you, Venetia? Where can everyone head to?
You can find me on all social media platforms at Venetia Lamanna, and you can find my podcast on your various players at Talking Taste Buds.
Venetia, thank you. It's always such a pleasure to talk with you. If you enjoyed this episode, you're going to absolutely love what's coming next week. So make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please do, if you have the time, leave a 5-star review. It does help this podcast get out there. We want to be able to reach more people, help more people, and maybe even perhaps reach higher highs in the charts. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit retrition.com. And you can always follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.